Thanks again to all the organizers. I don't want to take up too much time, but this is an incredible event, and I'm really, really pleased to be proud of it. Let's see. So my name is Michael Schieler, and I'm also an amateur radio operator. And together with my partner, we run an organization called Teach Me to Make. Actually, I forgot. There's one thing I wanted to do before I got started. I wanted especially to thank the people at Make who put this magazine in. If everybody will take it out and flip into the front, the inside front cover, you'll notice that there's an ad for a this pen from LiveScribe. I want everyone to call them up and ask them to open up their pen API. They have an API for the computer side, the application on the desktop. They don't give you the API for this thing, and that's what I want. So everyone call them and hassle them. You see? Okay, so I'm going to skip that slide. So just a tiny bit of background. I was a co-founder of a small company called Making Things, and we were just one of a number of companies who were trying to do this computer interfacey kind of thing, basically trying to do what Arduino finally got right. So that's not necessary anymore. I was also a community manager and an evangelist for a small company called OpenMoco. And that was really interesting. It was mentioned once before here. We were trying to build an open source cell phone. And it doesn't exist any longer, and that project didn't succeed. But it really blazed the way for some really interesting ideas, and some of the lessons that we learned and some of the pathways that we started, I think still continue to this day. And it's kind of an interesting very interesting model. But my main job is really teaching tinkering and contraption building, electronics and Arduino. And I do that both with adults and with children. And as you can see from these pictures, one of the things that we try to do is, as much as possible, use common household objects. And the idea is this blocking your... Okay, sorry. Those are my notes. My apologies. The idea is a couple of things. First of all, we like to have everything exposed, and this is kind of what's the core of my talk, which is a kind of an open source approach to teaching, which is a little bit different from having open source hardware and open source software. Yes, it does rely on both of those things, but there's a slightly different philosophy that we bring to the teaching part of it that also draws on the open source community and the open source ideals and ethics. So one of the other benefits is that everything is typically low cost. If you use things like a clothespin, it's usually going to be less expensive than a switch. Another really key part of our philosophy is that we want people to be able to look at these things and understand what's going on and say, oh, I can make that at home. I don't need to go to Radio Shack and buy a special switch. I don't need to get a particular kit from Teach Me to Make. I can pull out a clothespin that I probably have in my kitchen drawer, if they still make these things, and do that thing that I learned about. There's something else that we've discovered as we started doing this. I have to confess, our main reason for starting to do this was to keep the price down. We were given some opportunities to do workshops with children in schools in disadvantaged neighborhoods, and they said, yeah, great, you'll have lots of kids, you'll have lots of interest and all that, and oh, your budget is about 30 cents a kid. So you know, we had to scrounge and come up with ideas that we could actually implement with that kind of a budget. But the thing that we've noticed is that when people use common household objects, they're a lot less mystified by what's going on. So the clothespin in this case is just being both a switch and a battery holder, right? Now you can buy a switch. You can buy a knife switch, so it's open. You can buy a battery holder. But as soon as you put those in front of people who've never seen them before, their eyes glaze over, and it's almost like there's this little voice in their head that says, this is tech stuff, you won't understand this. But if you put a clothespin in front of people, it doesn't trigger that little demon that seems to shout those things. Some other examples, as I mentioned, clothespins as switches. That's a left and right control for a little remote-controlled vehicle. That's part of it there. And then we've done things even up to Arduinos. These, in this case, these are little robots based on a coffee can, as you can see. a pair of motors from our good friends at Solarbotics, and an Arduino. So it does get to the high-tech stuff. You can use the high-tech stuff, relatively speaking, but still use common household objects. And people seem to, you know, are drawn to the coffee can and the popsicle sticks, and they don't get too upset by having the electronics of the Arduino there. But there's one stumbling block that every time I pull it out, I haven't found a good solution to, and that's this thing. So for those of us who understand electronics and do a lot of prototyping, this is great, of course. You know, it's a great way to quickly put things together. I don't need to tell you all that. But to people who barely understand the concept of two wires touching each other, closing a circuit, the fact that some of these things connect horizontally and some of them connect vertically, and there's that gap in the middle, endless confusion. So what do we do? I found that picture somewhere, figured I had to use it. So this is what I started doing when people were getting confused, is I just tried using bare wires. Said, okay, forget about the board, let's see, we're only hooking up two or three or four components, let's just twist the wires together. And what I discovered is that people get it. Now, maybe to some extent this is a new idea to them, they have to understand that you have to strip off the insulation. Great, that's an important thing to know. I have them cut their own wire and strip off the insulation. And yes, they go through a number of tries where they cut all the wire along with the insulation, or they have a hard time stripping it off. But that doesn't take as long for them to get as the solderless breadboard. And once they get this, they have a really good understanding of what the conductor part is and what the insulator part is. It works for components also. I purposely choose LEDs with nice long leads and wires that twist together nicely. And look at some of the more complicated things. When you start talking about series and parallel circuits, how much easier is it to understand that those resistors are in parallel when they're wired up that way? Which brings me to the next step. Where do you go if you want more than two or three or four or five components? Well, as I mentioned, I'm an amateur radio operator, and I remember from the very early days in amateur radio, a popular method of constructing radios was on a piece of wood. In fact, how many people know that that's where the term breadboarding comes from? I am very impressed. Give yourselves a pat on the back. Usually I get no one. So a couple of things come to mind about these. First of all, everything's exposed, so you can see things nicely. The other thing is it has that other criteria of mine, which is people look at this and they say, oh, I can make that at home. I can find a block of wood somewhere, maybe even steal the breadboard from the kitchen. I can find some nails and bent wires around and start twisting stuff together. The solderless breadboard, even though it's ubiquitous and inexpensive and we understand it, it's something that other people have trouble with. I'm going to have to go and buy this thing in order to build this stuff. So there's a typical Arduino with an LED. It's a lousy picture, I'm sorry. Fortunately, I'm a better teacher than I am a photographer. The typical LED and resistor hooked up to the Arduino. And there's the other side of it, the input, a photoresistor and another resistor hooked up to the input side. And here's the same thing on a breadboard. Now, here's a slightly different angle that I took. Instead of having them twist all the wires together, I tried using alligator clips, a little jumpers with alligator clips on the end. They seem to get this. And I'm still a little mystified as to why. Somebody suggested to me that maybe they're used to battery cables. It seems plausible, but I don't know how many people actually have used battery cables. Maybe they just see them in the car, and I don't know. But that seemed to work. The alligator clips, people seem to get. And if any of you are familiar with the Make book on electronics, they use alligator clips in a lot of things. And there seems to be some easy understanding there about this. And people loved it. I have some great pictures of workshops where all these students are sitting around hammering little nails into blocks of wood and doing things. Okay, getting into the end there. So there's a close-up of the resistor in the LED. Serial resistors forming a voltage divider. Works really nicely. And we even carried on to the extent where, so there's an Arduino that is completely implemented on a solderless breadboard, another version of the coffee bot. So what I wanted to do is to see if I could make an Arduino on a real piece of wood breadboard. And I did, it worked really nicely and people really got it very well there. The one problem that I don't like here is the socket for the integrated circuit. So I'll leave you with this. If anyone can think of a good solution to putting an integrated circuit socket on a piece of wood with nails, I'm open to ideas. And that's it. Thank you very much.